Om Shanti. Welcome to another wonderful session here. I hope you're all flying high and enjoying the program so far, and there's so much more to enjoy, and I hope you're having some special meditation experiences. So we have a very special panel here today with some very wise and senior souls from right across the world. And the topic for the panel discussion is being a bestower according to the time. Being a bestower according to the time. And facilitating this lovely panel, we have our Sister Angie from Australia. Sister Angie, very inspirational soul who has been with Bubba now for 19 years, and she's the national coordinator for tutor training in Australia, so teaching the teachers who give the course. And I've had a lot of very positive experiences with Sister Angie, and she has a very sharp intellect, very sharp, able to manoeuvre in whatever situation is happening, and always so punctual for class and a very, very keen student. And on top of that, very light-hearted. And so Angie will introduce the panel. Hope you enjoy. Thank you.
Om Shanti, and good morning. And as Damien said, you know, this is an Australian-weighted session, because Damien's from Australia, I'm from Australia, and the first person I'm going to introduce is from Australia. So as Damien mentioned, our topic today is being a bestower according to the time. And the wisdom that we're going to hear is from these three wonderful souls. And the first one, let me introduce Peter Clark. And Peter is currently the coordinator at our Brisbane Centre in Australia. This is his second stint in Brisbane, but this stint's been 26 years. And prior to that, he was in the Canberra Centre. Canberra is our national capital. And he was in Brisbane before that. And Canberra before that. So he's sort of been like an elastic band. And I don't know, is that because of the cold weather, the hot weather, or... Oh, right. But yes, because Dr. Nirmala's thing was that she would move people where she thought they should be, and Peter was such a cooperative soul. He's been with Bubba for 43 years, and Peter's speciality, he has many, but one in particular that I always appreciate, he's a wonderful musician and a gifted musician. So if you ever get the chance, ask him to play something for you. And I'd like to introduce Dusha. And Dusha is the national coordinator in Macedonia. And we were having a little discussion before, because I've never been to Macedonia, but I was telling Dusha that when my son was a teenager, he played soccer for a Macedonian club in Newcastle in Australia. So, and they were the most beautiful people, and we enjoyed it so much because they were so embracing. So, and you look like you're like that too. Dusha is logically a scientist. So she has this wonderful speciality, and of course with a scientific bent, a scientific brain, she brings that skill and talent into explaining and imparting knowledge. So with so much scientific logic, I guess. And we almost got her to Australia a couple of years ago. She was to come and be part of a beautiful retreat in Australia that was for scientists. And so it didn't happen in 2023, but we're going to keep our fingers crossed that we'll get her there one of these days, and hopefully soon, because time's short, so soon. And last but definitely by no means least is our brother Hans. And Hans is from the Netherlands, but I don't know, Hans, it sounds to me like you are a bit of a wanderer, because he spends his time between the Netherlands and London and the UK. And his gift is he's a gardener. So he was a gardener before he came to Bubba 10 years ago, and now he's a gardener for Bubba. And he does that work in London and in Oxford centres in the UK. And, you know, when he was telling me about this, his whole face lit up. You could see the enjoyment and the passion for what he does for Bubba. So, and when we were working out where we were going to sit, Hans said, oh, so I'm over there in the forest. So he's in the forest, but we're all feeling very close. You're not too far away? Very good. So our wonderful panel, please give them a clap. So we've got about an hour, and we've got a few questions just to explore this topic, because, you know, I think every single Brahmin knows that we're, you know, 90 years of the confluence age have passed, and, you know, the 91st year seems to be flying by quite quickly. Here we are already in March. And, you know, I always heard it said in my early days in Gyan that things will be different towards the end. Who feels that things are a bit different now? Are you feeling that? Yeah. Yeah, I am. And, you know, we've all brought our gifts and our talents and our love to Bubba. But now, what's time calling us to do? Bubba's been telling us that yesterday he spoke about being a remover of sorrow and bestower of happiness like he is. And so what's time calling us to do now? And so we're really going to explore that today and hear the wisdom from these three wonderful souls. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy. I certainly am looking forward to this. So I'm going to get the ball rolling with the first question. Peter, seeing as you're sitting right next to me, I think I'll call on you. So Baba tells us that time is short. What do you think is the significance of this particular time of the confluence age?
Okay, it's such a huge question, really. And I think we all understand the significance, but it's a question of instilling that information into our system such that we become the embodiment of it. So we all understand that time is close, and I guess we're all a bit different in that. But one thing is that the closer we come to the end of the confluence age and the Iron Age, the more we will be feeling the pressure of everything that we haven't dealt with or settled, and we'll be witnessing that going on in others around us too, both in the family but also in the Lokic world. So I think the significance of it is that it's going to push everyone to the point where they ultimately will want to go back home again, and we know who takes everyone home, right? We know that. And we're here to help. We're here to help in that process. I think we've figured out here that that is the most elevated thing that we could possibly do to help in the process of recreating the world as God does do. So, yeah, I think that's it. The world needs to go from being completely downtrodden to completely pure again. And I feel reminded of that every time Baba uses those words, Satopadan, Tamopadan, back to Satopadan, I've experienced in my own time becoming a bit blasé with words such as that, because we hear them so often. Those words are in every murli, at least every sakka murli. And so it's easy for them to go in one ear, out the other ear. And yet, those two words really mean completely impure and completely pure, you know. And that can easily also rub someone up the wrong way and say, they think, oh, it's not completely impure. There are nice people out there. And we know why there are nice people out there, you know. There are always layers of lovely new souls arriving, and they keep the world somewhat fresh, even though it's rotting underneath, you know. But we can appreciate those souls and the value that they add to the world. But we understand. We understand that that's their role. They come at the end. They show a little shine, and in a way, sometimes they show us up, because we're not as shiny as they are. But inevitably, the significance is that everyone will come to know that God is the key soul who changes everything, and that there's a method that, you know, there's some way that he goes about doing that, and everyone has their own take on that, but everyone will come to understand that.
You made a comment, and if we have time, we'll maybe come back to it, the pressure of the things we haven't dealt with. So if there's time, I think that would be a wonderful one to explore, because, you know, if we're alert and if we're aware, it's going to be that we know and we can see those impurities that are left. We've dealt with the gross stuff, that's gone, but now the subtleties are still there. But if we're not vigilant, we'll miss them. So anyway, let's see how we go, because I think it will be a great one to explore. Dusha, what's your take on the significance of this particular time? And you might have a scientific take on this as well.
Okay. Thank you for encouraging me to go scientific. Yes, so confluence age by itself is very short in comparison with the length of the cycle. And from the beginning, very slowly, we were degrading. It was slow, but sure. And from that beginning, up until recently, we were going down only. Confluence age is the time to go up, back to the authentic, original self. But because the length of the time is so much shorter than the period when we were coming down, that means the speed of going up has to be much faster than when we were going down. But as you mentioned, we have been into this period for about 90 years. That means the speed has to be much higher now. So fast in the confluence age, but much higher in the last 10, whatever years, the remaining of the confluence age. And that really means that, roughly, we were not coming down with the same speed all the time, but it was coming faster and faster. But on average, we need to, let's say, 1 day is worth 100 days, or 1 minute is worth 100 minutes. So whatever we have done in 100 days, going down, we have to make up in 1 day. So really, that makes us so aware that there is no time to waste. No time to waste. And we also call this time diamond time. That means it's a polishing time. And what can polish a diamond? Just a diamond can polish a diamond, right? So we need to stick together and with our vibrations really make it happen. And it's time when we need to give. That means we have to feel content, full, And that's not enough. We need to feel overflowing, because we cannot give unless we are overflowing. We can give, but it will be conditional, because we will need something. But in order to give unconditionally out of love, we need to be overflowing, just like the sun, you know.
So that means we've got to be full, isn't it? To be overflowing, we need to be full to be overflowing.
Yes, we need to be full in order to be overflowing, of course, yeah? So the glass needs to be full to overflow, so the same for us. Not only full, so our task is to overflow. So, yeah.
I think it's so important what you're saying, and the speed. And particularly when you liken, you know, 5,000 or 4,900 years and 100 years,
yes.
And the slow speed that we've come down the second half of the cycle, 2,500 years, yes. But now we've got to go up so quickly. So don't waste any time. So precious.
That's right. But just to highlight, by wasting 1 minute, we have wasted an opportunity to rise for those 100 minutes that we were going down. So wasting 1 minute is a big waste.
So for that constant awareness, alertness.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so good. Thank you. Hans, what, over in the forest, are you okay over there? So what's your take on this, about the importance of this time?
For me, it's that since I became a Brahmin, and Baba said that I don't have to do any bhakti anymore. For me, certainly the last few years is a letting go of things. We had a detached house. We moved to an apartment near the center, and I started working less and less, shifting my energy to also other things. But the viragya, the disinterest, that really pulls me, because I like to, my house is clean, my room is clean, I don't have to waste lying around my house. I like to get rid of things, but not only physically, but also emotionally. But that's the hardest for me. But when I get, when I'm in the garden and I'm in the house of a client, mostly women, because they're mostly interested in gardening. And then I'm mirrored all the time. I see their attachment to things, or mine attachment to things. So the disinterest is what I like, I think, the most the last few years, and that it has its own path. So I read the Murli, I hear the Murli, but the disinterest in me is so high that it wants attention a lot of the times. So when I'm alone in the garden, yeah, then it's quiet. So it's like a submarine. I boom, and then thoughts comes back, and then boom, and so and the disinterest for me also is not to be a taker. I was used to getting stuff or things done from other people, but now I feel a natural resentment against taking, and it's not always perfect. I'm not 100% pure, but I'm still. That part is also very nice to be working on, not taking.
So you mentioned about the simplicity of your home, and I'm sure that must translate to your garden as well. And I was thinking when you were saying simplicity of the home, but then also letting go of things emotionally, it must be a bit like, I'm sure, or maybe you do, liken it to pulling out weeds from the garden, pulling out weeds from your mind, pulling out weeds from the soul, purifying the soul. Is it like that?
Yeah, and also people have the tendency to collect things in their garden, And it's like behind the shed, there's like 20-year-old stuff and everywhere. And I like to clean. So sometimes I can subtle confront people with their habit of collecting. And I even have done some house and shed cleaning with clients because they were stimulated by my approach. So I like that too. So I'm really mirroring when I'm at places. So
it's so nice, you know, look at these different perspectives. We've got a musician, we've got a scientist, we've got a gardener, and such diversity. All Baba's children are answering the simple question in such different ways. So let's see how we go on the next one. Okay, I'm going to start with you, Hans, this time. What are the prerequisites for being a bestower? If you were to put together a bestower checklist, what would you include?
I don't know if I can, how you say that? Someone's qualities, their brother, that sister.
Maybe make it a personal one. If you were to put together a personal bestower checklist, what would you include?
Well, I'm not including the things I can't see because I know myself, but not, I know myself to a certain point, but absolutely a giver. A deity is a synonym for giving. So not taking, that's the other side. Be friendly. Not, I used to say try to be friendly, but be friendly, because trying is, you know.
What's the difference?
Trying, that's then I'm always working to gain that quality. And just being is that I'm just am friendly. But these are also qualities that I was not, that's not necessarily my natural quality. So my soul wants things, but my inner habits sometimes want something else. But that's the, how you say that, that's the deficient part that wants to be solved. Because the Vishnu says, I just have to be a deity and a pure soul. But the second half of the cycle is the bhakti part. And that's, that are all the habits I have. So that's that day, that's like a parallel street. And then sometimes the car wants to move to that side, and sometimes that's a, but of the qualities, yeah, I think a giver and be friendly, that then you go a long way. Then I go a long way.
So having to do some work, and I think this is true for all of us, is that these qualities that we'll find out what Dusha and Peter have to say don't necessarily come naturally to us. So we've got to cultivate them. We've got to nurture them and draw them out. And once out, we then have to nurture them and look after them so that they continue to grow.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good. Mm. What about for you, Dusha? What's your thoughts on the checklist for being, your personal checklist for being a bestower?
I would agree with Hans that it's absolute giver, unconditional giver, giving out of love rather than something to get back, or rather than having some interest or expectations, just giving out of pure love for the sake of giving, just like the sun, as I mentioned earlier, because the sun radiates those rays, and all the channels of communication are busy. There is no channel of communication for something to come back. So it's just giving. It's up to us what we take, but the sun is giving. So just that is the closest, perhaps, physical object that I would compare with a bestower. So definitely giving out of love. Listening carefully to the crying souls, I would say. Listening carefully, because the souls will be needy. They will be asking for something, but it's a big question whether that is what they need. So we need to have a very developed power to discern, to see what it is and not what it seems to be. To give the soul what it needs, not what the body says.
How do you do that?
Sorry?
How do you do that? Oh, how do you discern?
Oh, okay. It's a skill that is acquired. We do not get born with it. Of course, originally we had it, but we lost it on the way. I would say, I will be brave because you're an educator, I will say it's a heuristic learning rather than algorithmic learning. So it's not something that somebody will say, okay, if you want to develop the power to concern, you need to do 1, 2, 3, 4. It's not that way. But we need to experiment, trial and error, with small things. What is very interesting about the power to discern, you train it on the small things, like small situations, small decisions, but you gain as much as it is a big decision, if it is the right decision. Gain within the development of the power to discern. So I trained it on many small things, and it's becoming better and better, progressing. At some point I called it X-ray power, because you could see the bones rather than just the surface. And as I progressed a bit more, I started calling it MRI power. So you see even the soft tissue inside, not only the bones. But work at it. It's quite a process, but it's doable. And the best thing it is, we can acquire it, we can learn it. It's not something that we say, oh, I'm not good at it, I can't do it, and that's it. We can all learn it, and Baba wants us to learn it. But also, because we came to the power to discern through listening carefully and hearing what is not being said, this is also through knowing self well and what we have gone through and what we needed at certain times, that can also help to hear the real need of the souls. But the most important thing, the first step in the whole that process, is to listen, to be present and to listen, rather than thinking about something else or sorting out your own problems. Or maybe hearing what we want to hear rather than what the soul is expressing. So it's a whole complex process that we need to do, but it's our task as a bestower, definitely, just like Baba is doing it. And one more thing I would add on that list is being humble. But also, together with being humble, seeing yourself as really not doing anything, we're just instruments, being channels through which Baba can act. So I think those three would be the most important things on my list. Of course, it's not an exhausting list. Yeah.
And you've touched on two aspects that I'd like to, time permitting, enlarge on. One was the cries of distress of the souls in the world. The second is humility. So that ability to listen and to be completely quiet and present in order, and as you say, it's not just the words, but it's listening with the self so that we can intuit the need of the other.
You used some keywords there, and it reminded me to say that bestowing, for me, is not about focusing on giving. Giving should be a consequence of a correct posture of being. Yeah? So I correct my posture of being, and giving comes naturally. And in that case, there is no calculation. You give and you're not even aware that you're giving. You're giving. And naturally, no expectation. I would say.
That's so beautiful. Thank you. Peter, I want to hear your checklist, and also you might want to start expanding on this aspect of the importance of humility as a quality of a bestower.
Okay, sure. I thought we were developing a nice list there, actually. I think just to try and put it in really simple terms, the first thing I need is I need to have something to give. In order to bestow, I need to have something to bestow. And so in order to have that, I need to have a good connection with the source. And I think that just comes first and foremost, because all of us come into Brahman life and, you know, some have obvious qualities and become involved in service very quickly, and they have things to offer, and that's, you know, that's obviously seen and appreciated and by the rest of the family and so on. But I think any of the qualities, any of the skills or talents that we come to Baba with, they're in an impure state, and we need to have them purified too. So in order to do that, I think it's going to come back to connection with the source. So if I'm trying to express my talents and specialties in service, and yet I'm not really connected to Baba, then it starts to present problems, and I think ego comes out. Even if ego is not there to start with, it'll present problems even with others, that there's jealousies, there's all sorts of things come into being. And so whatever it is that I have that I can offer to in Baba's service, I need to really offer that in a very, very pure sort of a way. So I need to be as altruistic as I can. And I know Baba will often point out to the fact that he's the only truly altruistic soul, and I think that's absolutely true. But we're all striving to be as altruistic as possible, and I think that just means we're not looking to get back something for what we give. Because what are we giving? We're only giving what Baba's given us. And I think if my consciousness is aware of that all the time, then there won't be any problems. I will be just offering that, knowing that I cannot run out, because I'm always being refueled. You know, like a plane that gets refueled in the air, you know, a military plane or something. We need to be like that. We're still in the air, we're still flying along, we're still doing what we're meant to be doing, but we're being refueled at the same time. So I think that faith needs to be there. Faith needs to be there, and in a way the sort of trust that Baba will always be there for me to give me what I need. Even if I walk into a situation not knowing anything, being particularly out of my natural comfort zone, we can still deal with it, because at least this is the experience that I've had countless times, really. And I actually have found now that I quite enjoy challenging my own comfort zone, and sometimes completely walking straight out of it, you know, and ignoring any sort of comfort boundaries that I may have set up in the past. And I like that, because it really puts it back into Baba's hands. It's sort of like I'm free-falling, and I know that Baba's going to be there to catch me. I mean, in some ways, the idea of falling is not a good metaphor, but in this sense, it's basically falling, because I always hated heights, right? But it's falling in a free way, knowing that Baba's always going to catch me, and it doesn't really matter. So I think that sort of trust, that faith, also needs to be there. Yeah. And then that humility and that egolessness, because definitely the more I'm under the illusion of this ego of, you know, the body conscious self, the more I'm going to get it wrong when it comes to doing everything, literally everything. And service becomes important, of course. We're in the public eye, maybe, or we're being relied upon by our colleagues, or all of these reasons. And so it's really important to be egoless. And definitely a soul who has a lot of ego about what they do in the aid even of Baba's service strike problems. They come across problems, no doubt. And I think we've probably all experienced that if our conscience is acute enough to pick up on it, which is really good. Then we would have seen how, yes, I had a little bit of ego and it caused a little problem, right? Or sometimes I had a bit more than that and it caused more of a problem. But it's always going to be the case. So I think humility is there naturally, and I think it was Hans who pointed this out, but it just becomes a natural thing, like all of our qualities. But it will be there when we're realizing that actually Baba's the boss. This is Baba's task. You know, I'm just here to help. That's all, you know. And I'm totally surrendered to whatever Baba wants me to do.
Life becomes easy. Am I on? I am on. Life becomes easy when Baba's got the reins. Yeah, absolutely. Hans, do you have something to add on humility? Is it something that you feel that is a natural quality for you, or is it one that you've worked to develop? Is it one that you see as important, particularly in this role of being a bestower?
I have to think about that. I certainly need to keep an eye on it. I think develop it also. Because when I do things, I sometimes get praised. And course before Gyan also, and that sometimes sometimes it's easy let it go or don't take anything from it, but sometimes it touches the ego, and then the ego is like a power. It's like with its wings and colors and things. Oh well, it's nice. And but I don't enjoy that. I'm very like a Catholic Christian type of deep inside, because it feels like sort of punishment if I enjoy it. So if I'm humble and somebody says you did that good. And then I respond inner, then there's like someone in me with a whip, and he says, well, down. So also you mentioned love with giving and love. So that's, I think that is my quality, which I'm certainly developing, but it's not really half full yet. The loving with things I do. I can be very strict and punishing inside. So that sometimes tends to make a little bit haywire in me, and then also it's outside there also. So
yeah, that projection, isn't it, of what's inside us. And as Peter was saying, you know, about when we really see ourselves as Baba's instruments and we move into that role, that actually we become great. And when we're not putting ourselves in front, but we're letting Baba shine through, then actually we become great. And, you know, again, I was thinking of your role, your special role as a gardener, that sometimes you're getting praise, but I'm sure there's a lot of work in the background that goes on that nobody ever sees in order to create the beauty of the garden, that all that hard work that would be done that others would have no clue. And I'm sure you don't go around saying, well, you know, I did this and I did this and I did this to make this beautiful garden. So there'd be a lot of incognito work. And, you know, this thought that as a bestower, that a lot of what we do to bestow is incognito work. We don't have to be overt. We don't have to always be up front. That often our part will be a quiet part and even a silent part, but we can contribute so much from that position and that perspective. What do you all think about that, about being incognito bestowers? I know that wasn't something we discussed. I'm just throwing it in.
It is probably necessary to be incognito in order to be a bestower, and to be humble in order to be a bestower. Because what is opposite of humble? Really, it's a strong ego. When I do something and I want everybody to know that I've done it, and not only that they know, but I want them to praise me in a good way, you know, to tell me good feedback, because otherwise I wouldn't be happy, because my ego is hurt. So really, incognito and humility, being incognito and being humble, go hand in hand, and they are both absolutely necessary in order to be a bestower. I feel that when we achieve in a visible way, we get less marks. Because achieving in an incognito way, you are achieving it and you are not needing anything back. Of course, we cannot be, as Peter mentioned about altruism, we cannot be 100% altruistic while we are in a physical body. Because while we are in the physical body, we have third Newton law, which is action and reaction. So whatever we do, whether it's good, bad, neutral, whatever it is, we get something back. So however altruistic we want to be, and bestowers, which is, again, altruistic and a bestower is the same thing, or on equal level, giving on equal level. But again, as we said earlier, time is short, now is the time to give. So we need to give as much as possible, so that, and no recognition is important, no visibility is important, which means undercover, incognito, just give, regardless of whether it's seen or not. So unconditional giving out of love, I guess, again, going back.
Because Baba talks about this, doesn't he? You know, that we're accumulating. We're not accumulating for the confluence age, we're accumulating for the future, because when we hit golden age, it's neutral karma. So we're going to live off what we accumulate now. And in that way, if, as you say, Dusha, if I'm seeking recognition for that now, it cancels it out. So that undercover bestower is accumulating, continuing to accumulate, and not, there's no leakage of that need for it to be seen.
And that's so beautiful. You know, in this one life, if I want to be, let's say, a professor, I will study hard, and in this life, 99%, I will become a professor. Also, Baba in the Murli says, if you help people, if you build a hospital in this life, you will have good health in the next life. But it is also one life only. So within life, what you do, you get back. Within one life also. But now, in the confluence age, we are gaining, we are receiving for the next 20 births, half a cycle, next half a cycle. So we are getting back in this life also, because, to be honest, you know, logical thinking, I could hardly be gullible to believe that, you know, I need to suffer now so that I can enjoy in the next half cycle. I need to get something now also. So some evidence, some proof that I'm achieving something. So that is our one birth, and then another 20 in the first half cycle. So it's beautiful. Isn't it worth an investment? In one life, and it's not really one life because I haven't been a Brahmin all my life. I've been Brahmin 25 years, let's say. In 25 years and another however many, I'm gaining for another 2,500 years. I think it's worth an investment. It's a good deal, as Baba says.
Do you think it's a good deal? Do you think what we're doing now is a good deal? What do you think? Put your hand up if you think it's a good deal. They don't think it's a good deal. They do. Of course it is. It's a wonderfully good deal and an incredible fortune that we've all got. You know, when you think of the fortune of, for all of us, of being a Brahmin at this time, and Baba gives us this title of not just a bestower, but a world bestower. And what we're doing now, yes, we're working on self-transformation, but our self-transformation is the catalyst for the change in the world. So it's no small thing that we're setting out to achieve, and we are achieving now.
Shall I add a scientific fact? Recently, in the last few years, there has been a research done at the Imperial College in London. I will simplify what I said. But they said that 6%, so the consciousness of 6% of the souls need to change in order to for the whole world to switch. 6%. So this is what we're doing, going towards 6.
So it's exponential. 6%.
Oh, you know how I understand it. I really was wondering why only 6? How can 6 do it? It's not so exponential as it is momental. So when we reach the 6%, what will happen is the light will get switched on. That's all we need to do. 6% is necessary to switch the light on. We don't need to go around, look for people, and you know, we just need to reach that 6%. But we have to make sure that we are part of those 6%, to raise our consciousness to that level, to be part of them. And once we get that, with no effort, in 1 second, it will happen.
And he talked about it today. He talked about you can't see the light in a room full of light. You can only see the light in the darkness. But that light in the darkness is so incredibly powerful. So that 6%, that small amount, is an enormous impact. And that's what we're working towards, huh?
Yes, so 6% is enough. This research says it. I'm glad that comes from scientific research. We always knew it, but we didn't have the research done. But now they say 6% is enough for the consciousness to switch. So, very powerful.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, I have to ask this question. It's such an important question because, you know, Baba refers, and you referred to it also, about the distress of the souls of the world. And we know as servers, as bestowers, that it is our role to help those in distress. So the question is, how can we do that? How can we be a bestower accurately according to Gyan, according to Baba's knowledge, but also responding to the needs of humanity and the individual? Because they don't necessarily know what's good for them. And so how can we, I think it's a bit tricky, you know, how can we give them what we know they need and make them feel, yes, this is what I need? How can we do that as bestowers? Because there's resistance. People don't like to change. It's too hard. So how can we give them what we know they need in a way that they'll accept it? And whoever would like to respond to this.
So, as an educator, I can teach somebody, when you're talking about transformation, I can teach them how to transform. That's the first step. This is the first way to do it. The second one would be to be an example. And the third one, where we are going now, is to bestow. So, when the time comes, when a challenging situation comes, they will know who to follow. Not just by example, but even more refined way. The radiation, the vibration. We won't even need to call them and say, follow me, let's do this, let's do that. Just by being there and acting in an accurate way, they will know who to follow. That is the last final stage that we are reaching now, I think. Of course we are holding courses. We are helping people with words, with advice, with all sorts of things. However, the big way is going to be bestowing, leading by bestowing. Because it's a handful of us, we won't be able to speak or teach 8 billion people. We can just do the right thing and the others will follow. That is the finest stage. Niraka stage, I would call it. You know, subtle.
I think there's so much truth in that. And this aspect of creating an atmosphere, a pure atmosphere that is attractive. And I know I'm connected with the Peninsula Retreat Centre in Australia. And often when guests come, the first thing they say to us is, when I drive in the gate, I feel the peace. I feel the peace. And the peace that they're feeling is the work that's been done over the years by meditators in the centre. And Hans, you spend a lot of time in London and in Oxford, and I'm sure that vibration, that vibrational frequency is there, and I'm sure that's something that draws you. What's your experience of other people experiencing vibration, either from yourself or the places where you serve? So Hans, your experience of about atmosphere in the places either that you're creating or you're experiencing?
I think I learned a lot in a Global House in London. It's like, how you see that? A steam pan, how you say that? A fast cooking pan, how you say that? There's a lot happening there, and a lot of seniors work there. And I learn a lot of my subtle, like my royal forms, and they get mirrored there easily. I like to be there because I like to feed off it. Sometimes at my place it stays a little bit under the radar, but when I come there it's like in the spotlight. So my sanskar, my habits are visual there. But the energy is also, how you say that? London for me has like an energy of a detachment. They give help, and then when the help's not needed, they just pull back. And so sometimes it can feel like they're too detached for me, but that's my attachment. But I like those things I learned there. I never wondered why that attracted me so, but the energy, that kind of energy in London, also it's very paka energy, that those things attract me because I need some guidance in that for myself. And when I come back, my clients sense it. When I come to houses, I've got a lot of clients, and not all, but a few dozens feel the energy when I come to Madhuban the first time, maybe the second, 2018 or something. I came back from Madhuban, and then maybe 2 days later I was working in a garden, and the woman, the client, she was sensing me, I say that? She was noticing me, my energy. But for her, it didn't have a good response. It reminded her of the nuns. So I had just a very quiet, peaceful Madhuban energy. I was not saying a lot. I was very happily working with the plants and the flowers and everything. But for her, it was the last time I came there. she never called me back, because it reminded her of two things. Because she at one point she said to me, your energy reminds me of things, but then she would look not so nice if she'd eaten something bad. So it also gives that kind of response. So it's not, a lot of times it's positive, but sometimes it's very mirroring, very open. And some souls react differently. Yeah, that's what it is.
It's so interesting, because that association has robbed her of an experience. And I guess in that situation, the only thing that we could do in that situation is good wishes. There's nothing else we could do in that situation. But it's such a sad thing, isn't it, that she's denying herself that peaceful experience because of a past association. Yeah, very interesting. Now, you know, there's so many angles we can take on being a bestower, and our time is very limited. You touched on something. Hans, it was you that touched on something that you see in Global House, and it's there's a lot of activity going on. There's people are busy, they've got tasks to complete, and yet there's a generation of this vibration. And for all of us in our places, we're all responsible. We've all got tasks that have to be completed, and things that we have to do. And if we're still working, you know, we have responsibilities. If we're with our families, we have responsibilities to them. So how do we, in all that busyness, how do we not lose being a bestower? Peter, what's your thoughts on that?
So if I'm to understand the question rightly, just in the normal life that we have, with everything going on around us, how do we maintain our stage as a bestower? Gosh. Yeah. I mean, we're in the situation that we're in because souls there are connected with us, and we need to settle karmic accounts with them quite often, and we need to inspire them in some way. And so some of them, you know, have deep accounts with us, and some of them won't particularly pick up on being inspired for any reason, but others will quickly pick up on it, I suppose. Dusha said, the power of discernment there, or being able to discriminate between, you know, what's actually needed. Because sometimes Baba says, oh, the call of the devotees, sometimes he's talking about the call of the cries of distress, you know, those in distress. And I'm thinking, like, all of those souls matter, everything. There's always, there's this feeling of being deprived of something. And I think that even takes place in our regular life with normal people around us. They're all feeling deprived of something in their lives. And for us to pick up on what that is, does come back to our power of discernment. But also I think we need to realize that Baba's training us to understand that. So Baba is our chief advisor. You know, and we're the ones on the ground. We need to make the moves. But Baba's advising us the whole way. And we can feel that advice. We hear it every time in the Merli. And we will feel touched by Baba and so on. And, you know, if we're accurate in our yoga, we will pick up on that. We will catch his touching. And so we can serve even the most simple, ordinary folk living around us. We don't have to be confronted with people in great distress or people really, you know, really taking their bhakti to the nth degree. Yes, that will happen on occasions, and I think at the end it will be a big scene, right? But for the moment, it's all it might seem relatively tame around us. But I think this is a good opportunity to just maintain that level of being a bestower based on me not feeling deprived, based on me feeling full. So I should never feel in any way deprived of anything. You know, if I'm feeling unhappy or a little bit sad at times, then realize quickly where that's coming from and refill the self. You know, I remind myself of how lucky I am, and immediately it comes back. You know, it comes back. And I think you have to feel that level of fullness within you to be able to offer it to others.
I think that's so very true. If you look at that question from a slightly different angle and think of knowing Peter as I do, he wears many, many hats in Australia. He's got a lot of responsibilities, not just at the centre but on the national level. And so tasks, lots of tasks. So with all those things that we're doing, you know, I find this myself, that at times I can get lost in the task and I sort of tune out from Barbara and tune out from knowledge and tune out from vibration. And so the task suffers accordingly, or the task becomes very ordinary. But when I'm tuned in, everything becomes way more than ordinary. So maintaining that awareness and, you know, in the midst of everything that we've got to do, but holding on to that awareness, how do you do it?
I think balance was always something I was interested in my Brahmin life. And every day, not a day goes by where I don't watch the whole balance of everything. I take care of my physical being. I take care of my spiritual stage. And I keep all of it in check. Because I think when something goes out of balance, then, well, when I'm out of balance, then it's not just one thing that's out of balance. That one thing will affect all the other things. So that's really important. Yeah. So even if I've got a lot of things on my plate, and I'm a person who doesn't mind that, I like having variety, and I enjoy and I really cherish the fact that I can have different types of responsibilities, and some are more artistic, some are more methodical, and so on. And I just really enjoy that. I just feel thankful to Baba that I've, you know, that I've gotten all of that, because I wouldn't have thought that my life would pan out that way in the Lokic world. In the Lokic world, I wouldn't have achieved anything like what I've achieved in my Brahmin life, and it's all because of, obviously, being connected to Baba.
It's so beautiful. I think what you've said probably resonates with most of us. You know, as beautiful as our time has been, it's coming to a close. So just to sum up, I'm going to ask each of you for a one-word answer. If you were to sum up being a bestower according to this current time, is there one word or one phrase that would speak to how you feel and what you hope the outcome of being in that role, playing that part, will be? Okay, let me start. So I guess for me, it's to be and to become and to watch others be and become.
For me, it's unconditional love.
Being more gentle than I can, then I will also be more gentle to the outside.
Being connected and being loving and detached.
So wonderful. Thank you very much, Angie, Peter, Dusha, Hans, for sharing your wisdom and light, and our guest Lizard on the ground as well, enjoying the vibrations, you might see. So now we're going to have a song together, and we'll be able to share Baba's light through our wonderful instruments. Thank you.